Ice cold beer.
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I don't know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
Good morning and welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Oz, joined in the dugout by Brian Svensson.
What's up?
It is a beautiful morning and a long weekend imminent, so lots of baseball on the docket. Hopefully folks get outside and enjoy the sunshine as well.
Yep.
Sadly, though, we are going to start by pouring one out tonight. Probably pouring several out. Earlier this week, a Minnesota man, Todd Keeling of White Bear Lake, Minnesota, was found dead at SunTrust. This is the new Atlanta Braves stadium. He's an inventor who has developed a draft pour system that speeds up delivery of draft beer. The first place to get it actually was Target Field, which makes sense, obviously, being a Minnesota man. It's in two ballparks. This was going to be the third. And he was doing the installation and somehow became trapped in the freezer in SunTrust, which, I mean, I'm curious to see an investigation book, because having worked in a deli where there was a back freezer where we did store things, freezers are supposed to have like a crash bar kind of thing,
yep,
like a release to pop it open so that you don't get stuck in it.
Yes, and newer ones have like hinges that are specifically supposed to pop open in case of like the crash bar not
right,
functioning.
The pins are supposed to be able to release relatively easily.
Right.
His teenage sons were actually, so Keeling was 48 years old, and his teenage sons had been helping him with the install at SunTrust, but had left early, and he was finishing up the installation. His body was found by another person working at SunTrust after he had perished. So our condolences to his family and really just...
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, as someone who, you know, has been talking about that new craft beer area at Shaw Park, and, you know, this is an intersection of love of baseball and beer, and a guy who had invented a way to pour it like five times as fast without any foam... It's just one that really bummed me out when I saw this on Bleacher Report this week, and also seeing 48 years old dying in
way
really
too young.
Terrible circumstances, and I can only imagine
way too young. His family's got to feel awful. So yeah, my condolences and sympathies out to them as well. It's just it's not cool.
No, I guess we'll turn attention to kind of more positive things. The trade rumors continue to flourish. Now, earlier this week, there was reports that the Dodgers were kind of the prohibitive favorites now,
right,
to land Manny Machado. However, this is according to sources that you are not necessarily the hottest on.
No, Bob Nightingale is does not have a great track record of reporting stuff. He's basically just used as a mouthpiece for teams so often, and you could easily see this as somebody being like, "Hey, look, the Dodgers are looming." Like the Orioles using Nightingale as a mouthpiece to try and drive up the price for Machado.
So you think it would be an Oriole planted?
Yeah, I mean, Nightingale is, like, he is just used mainly, like, you know how, like, John Heyman is oftentimes used as a mouthpiece for Scott Boras? Well, Nightingale is very often used as a mouthpiece, especially for teams on the East Coast. So I could easily see this being the Orioles floating this as a way to try and drive up their bargaining value on Machado.
I mean, the big question, and we talked about this in previous weeks, is that, you know, one of the most likely things is they're looking for arms.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers don't necessarily have prospective arms that would be in a trade.
I mean, the Dodgers love their prospective arms a lot, and these prospect arms are such a huge part of what they're doing with you know, they've got all these guys that are injury prone, right? They specifically went out and got all these guys that were injury prone.
It's a club that used like 13
right
different starters last year.
Exactly. And like they love Stripling, they love Walker Buehler, they, you know, they have all these prospect arms, but they're using them.
That's the thing, right? Like there's not like a surplus,
right? And if you know, and this, the what doesn't pass the sniff test for me about this is if the Dodgers really really wanted Manny Machado, they would have gone out and gotten him when Seager got hurt.
That's the other thing, right? Like, so, I mean, obviously, there's an argument to be made that because losing Seager for the season, that does make them a possible landing spot for Machado.
But Seager's been out for like 2 months.
The striking while the iron is hot. This is a cool iron at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't quite pass the sniff test for me. I don't know. I mean, like, the Dodgers have played a lot of really good ball lately. Right, so they're back in the hunt for the playoffs when they weren't at the time that Seager got hurt. But you know, this doesn't pass the sniff test for me. If he gets traded to the Dodgers, I wouldn't be shocked or surprised or anything like that. But you know, them all of a sudden being the front runners now just makes me think that somebody's trying to drive the value up.
Other sort of trade rumor stuff. This is earlier today. Mariners, increasingly possible the Rangers will strike a deal to get Cole Hamels in advance of the All-Star break. This is John Morosi via Twitter and posted to MLB Trade Rumors last night. No indication as to what necessarily would be involved in the deal. This is, you know, an all-star pitcher, but who, you know, at age 34,
he's been struggling,
has been scuffling a little bit. But the Mariners, obviously, you know, they're looking to solidify that. Like they're in the hunt, right? They're currently only 3.5 games back of Houston, who have been on a tear. But you know, they're still relevant, and a lot of people wrote them off as soon as Robbie Cano got.
We did.
That suspension. Yeah, I know, right? We were definitely one of the lot of people. But they're 51-31, a .622 winning record, which currently has them fourth in the American League. And they hold one of the wild card spots.
I mean, this makes sense. The Cole Hamels things make sense, right? Pitchers usually, especially good pitchers, require a lot of prospects in order to get them off of teams, right? Because teams are looking to if they're trading good pitchers, they're looking to rebuild. The thing is that the Rangers do not have a lot of prospects, right? And Cole Hamels has a massive contract, and so that diminishes his value. And he hasn't exactly pitched great lately, so that diminishes his value. But the track record is there.
Right.
So,
and the argument may be that he is a cheaper acquisition than some of the other pitchers. I mean,
right.
Obviously cheaper than the Mets darling duo who like,
correct, he's much likely cheaper than J.A. Happ.
This is the thing,
he's probably
Happ and Tyson Ross.
I was gonna say Tyson Ross too. Yeah,
both have, I would say, outpitched him this season, and both are signed to cheaper contracts. So if you're a club looking to acquire these guys, Hamels is probably the the lowest on the list.
Cheaper than Snell, cheaper than Archer.
Wouldn't cost you as much.
Right. So in terms of prospects, like obviously it's got to be a team that's willing to eat his massive contract. Mm-hmm. And
also has decent amount of postseason experience.
Yeah.
Where he's performed pretty well.
Fairly well, yeah.
A 3-4 ERA and 98 and a third playoff innings.
Yeah. No, he's like he's been really good in the playoffs. That's no doubt.
Just shy of 100 innings is a significant amount of playoff experience.
Right. Like time with the Phillies for sure. And obviously he had some runs with the Rangers. I'm trying to think of who else he'd pitched for in the playoffs off the top of my head, but I'm blank, unfortunately. I'm sorry. So, this makes sense for the Mariners. It does. It makes a lot of sense. They get another good left-hand arm, or potentially good left-hand arm with a lot of playoff experience. And then their rotation becomes, for the playoffs, it becomes what? Felix, Hamels, and...
James.
Yeah, Paxton. Big Maple. That's not bad. You can throw Gonzalez in there every now and then if you need him to. Yeah, that's a good rotation. That's a playoff rotation right there. I like it.
So Carlos Correa placed on the 10-day DL.
Yep.
Back with
stiffness.
Back discomfort, back stiffness, depending on which site you read. What this did do is open up a roster spot for which the Astros called up young southpaw Cionel Perez.
Okay.
I'm excited about this one. Just because the farm development for the Astros, I think, is a maybe unheralded part of this story of them, you know, winning the World Series.
They develop so many players.
The Lunau, like, complete, like, retrofit and restructuring of, like, everything from the bottom up. I mean, even to the point where they're one of the clubs experimenting with, like, rolling out two different starters in their minor league starts and stuff, right? Like, he's just, like, wiped the slate clean and redesigned it from the bottom up.
Yep.
And obviously, they've brought up young guys, you know, Correa, Bregman, guys who started performing really well.
Springer.
But there's still more. Like, this is the, like, it's a
never-ending well
of riches for them.
Yeah.
Perez in 57 and a third double-A frames has a 2.2 ERA.
Oh.
With 11.1 K per nine and a 3.3 walk per nine.
Oh, so, my goodness. Astros pitchers in below three ERAs. Name a more iconic duo. Oh, my goodness. They're so good.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. So I'm excited to see. I mean, obviously, it's only a 10-day DL stint, so he's only going to be probably up for one start. But it's exciting to see more from this team. I mean, it's such a phenomenal team. And
it's not even just hitters either. It's pitchers. It's everything. They have good fielders, good hitters, good pitchers. It's never-ending well of talent for them. It's crazy. I think the only guy they didn't hit on was, J.D. Martinez, right? He was an Astros prospect, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they had him and then shipped him to the Tigers.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the deal was that took him.
But he's the only one that they didn't hit on, and even then, he's still been incredible. Like, these guys are nuts. I just don't understand. Like, how much they've absolutely slaughtered the rest of the major leagues in terms of prospect finding and development is just baffling to me.
Yeah, I mean, the Rays got praised, in the extra 2% era when Jonah Carey was kind of spotlighting things. Obviously, now a lot of that staff have moved to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
In terms of their development and the way that they shifted the training of pitchers and limited them to, like, only throwing, like, two types of pitches in the minors and, like,
yeah,
working on PFP and
right,
just the thought that they put to things, and then obviously developing the shift and being kind of experimental. The Astros don't get the credit for it, but they're phenomenal in terms of player development.
Yeah, and they're trying all kinds of weird things. I remember Lundau started back before they got rid of Talz Hill. He started putting, like, Hills in center field of his minor league on his minor league diamonds in order to get players used to what they were going to have to field with when they played at home in Houston. And I mean, obviously, it's been removed in all those places since then. But just like that sort of forward thinking and all the kind of crazy stuff that they're doing, the two starters, having players play multiple positions in the minor leagues so that way that they're ready to go and play in multiple positions in the majors. They're not just pigeonholing their players into one spot. And I think they're one of the teams that have spent and gotten nutritionists all the way down through their minor league levels, mm-hmm. which is something that teams should do and start feeding their players better. Because if you've seen some or heard some of the testimonies of minor league players on basically how they're living on like peanut butter bread and cots on the ground, like you can't be a high level athlete living off of that. So that the fact that the Astros are
poor sleep, poor nutrition,
right, and the fact that they're, you know, they've instituted therapists and psychologists all the way through their minor league systems and nutritionists or dietitians all the way through their minor league systems, it's obviously paying off in spades.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Speaking of crazy, we always like to harp on the Major League Baseball and their rules.
Always.
And some of the ridiculousness. It was announced that there's a little bit of a course correction as far as the uniform code and the specialty cleats.
Right.
Obviously, there have been... I mean, we see this in the NBA, too, where, you know, people have, you know, either, like, special occasions or are trying to remember someone or, you know, marking
even just want cool-looking
times
cleats.
Or just want cool-looking things. We've talked about Mike Clevenger getting in trouble for it and having to pay a fine. So the Major League did announce that they're shifting things a little bit, but in true MLB front office fashion, did it half-ass and kind of...
Right, they're only allowing position players to wear specialty cleats. They're not allowing pitchers to do it. I can see why, because if like cleats are really too distracting, then I can totally understand how it would mess with a batter's eye. I can get it, but I don't know, man. Like if you're, it just kind of seems weird that you're going to allow position players to do it, not pitchers, right? Like you could still allow them to have specialty cleats, but put like restrictions on like specific colors that they shouldn't have, right? Like don't let them. I mean, heck, if the A's pitchers can wear white cleats, I don't understand why you can't have pitchers wearing specialty cleats. Like, what's the worst that can happen?
Like, as long as they don't have like mirrors on them or like reflectors,
like super like, chartreuse, you know, neon colors. Either
pitcher kicks his leg up and it would like
blind the batter.
But other than that, like as a batter, like. You're not looking. You're looking at the glove
and the arm angle.
Like you're. I've never read anything from hitters discussing the art of hitting that involves them looking at the feet
ever
of the pitcher, right?
No.
And I mean, you've got, you know, classic like Satchel Paige with a crazy leg kick, and you've got. Like other guys who have like weird kind of like hitch steps that, you know, run them almost afoul of balks all the time.
Carter Capps. Stroman does weird things with his timing too.
But none of the hitters are saying that that's what they're watching. They're watching like arm slot.
Yep.
They're watching like how they're holding their hand in the glove to kind of conceal what's coming.
What the grip is, yeah.
But like the argument that these shoes will somehow be too distracting for the hitter seems like a fallacy to me.
Yeah, I would. I mean, like before, the thing is, right, is that the MLB probably did this without asking a lot of position players about it. They probably just saw the outrage, thought, oh, this is going to be too distracting, so we're going to let position players do it, but not pitchers. I would have just asked a bunch of major league hitters. I would have sent out. Like a questionnaire to, you know, whatever the top 50 hitters and maybe like a random sampling of middle 50 ones, right? Like, does this, if the pitchers have nutty cleats, does this affect you? No? Okay. We don't care.
Yeah. Or like send it to like the MLBPA to, you know.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't know, but I'm at least glad that they're making some of a step. They might be half-arsing it, but at least they're making some of a step towards the right direction. They're going to see how much traction this gets. Can you imagine how awesome like some of these players' cleats are going to be? Now that they've lifted this, July 4th is going to be off the chain.
Mm-hmm.
with crazy cleats, I bet. Bryce Harper, I bet, has got like four different cleats that he's ready to roll out at any given time. Man, this is going to be fun.
Maybe there'll be some sort of special Canada Day ones for the Jays on
Monday. Oh, that'd be nice. Stroman seems to like to dress up for that. He's not the one pitching for it, though. He's pitching tomorrow, unfortunately. But we might see something. Grichuk and Teoscar. Jan Hervis seems like somebody who would do that. So
yeah,
hopefully.
So keep your eyes on the field and look out for some fun cleats. And I'm sure we'll see them on Instagram on players' pages and stuff like that.
Oh, definitely.
I want to tip my cap.
Sure.
To the Detroit Tigers organization.
Yes.
So earlier this week, the Tigers announced that they fired pitching coach Chris Bosio, who was in his first year with the Tigers. He had previously been with the Cubs for...
Fixed Jake Arrieta.
4 or 5 years. They did it on the spot. According to the statement by the club and announced by Alvila, the GM, effective immediately, the Detroit Tigers have terminated the contract of pitching coach Chris Bosio for his insensitive comments that violated club policy and his uniform employee contract. The organization holds all of our personnel to the highest standards of personal conduct, both on and off the field. We have zero tolerance for this type of behavior. The club will have no further comment on this matter. So apparently he made insensitive comments to a fellow employee of the club, like an off-field employee.
Correct.
And it was overheard, and he was fired immediately.
Correct.
Right then and there. And
I have
some... You know, when you say a zero tolerance policy,
yeah,
this is what comes of it. And I have to say, like, kudos to them for holding true on it, because considering some of the comments that leak out or get made that people make non-apologies about.
Yep. Well, he did one, too. So there's more information about this since then.
Okay.
Bosio came out and gave an explanation saying that, so the word that was used, I'm not going to say it on air, but it is reference to a particular jungle animal. And he came out and claimed that he was using a nickname of another ball player, a pitcher, Stumpf, who apparently is a very tall, lanky individual, and he was claiming that that was what he was in reference to. And then Daniel Stumpf came out after Bosio made this statement saying that that is what he was, it wasn't a racial statement, he was calling the player by his nickname. Stumpf comes out and says he has no idea about this nickname at all. None whatsoever. He's never been called that ever in his life, and he has no knowledge that anyone has ever called him that in his life. So Bosio's just digging himself a hole. It's embarrassing, and it's awful, and I'm glad the Tigers fired him.
Yeah, Anthony French of the Detroit Free Press, I guess, gave some information around Bosio's account, but Alvila, in response to that, said, "We know what we did and why we did it. We'll see where it goes from there. The action we took was appropriate. There were things involved, but I can't comment any further." Obviously, conceivably, litigation could ensue, and so he's got to, you know, couch his language in a certain way.
Of course.
But I appreciate a club that holds true to a zero tolerance policy and in this day and age says no.
That word is unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. And in the way he used it, it's even more unacceptable. And so I'm proud of the Tigers for doing this. You got to do this. The Jays should have done this ages ago with Kevin Pillar after that incident. They shouldn't have just sent him to counseling. I think Kevin Pillar is a phenomenal ball player, and he was my favorite Jay before that incident. But you can't, like, the Tigers are doing 100% the right thing in this instance. You have to. You don't tolerate this kind of nonsense, especially in the way that America's going right now. Just, I'm glad. Boot the guy.
Yeah.
Deal with the consequences after.
Speaking of consequences, the decision not to trade Zach Britton yet has kind of blown up in Dan Duquette's face, as Britton has blown a pair of saves in the last week and took his ERA up to 7.04, diminishing his trade capacity.
He's not been good, but it's like, let's remind ourselves that it's still Zach Britton, and he missed a lot of time. All you need to do is look at Madison Bumgarner, who was not super great in his first three starts, but has turned it around and been phenomenal in his last two. Britton will figure it out. He's one of the best closers in baseball, and you know the trade deadline isn't coming up super soon, and it's the end of July, right?
But Britton wasn't coming off an injury, was he, though?
Yeah, Achilles.
Oh, right. That's right. Okay. I had forgotten about that. Too many injuries. This is the thing.
Too many injuries. Yeah, he missed a lot of last year, all of spring training, and then like half, obviously almost this year with an Achilles injury. So a ruptured Achilles. So I'll give him time. I'll give him time. I mean, I'm not going to disagree that it's Duquette should have traded him two or three seasons ago, but I don't think the storybook is completely written on him yet. So.
Any other things you wanted to discuss? I know we had a few things on the docket here.
Did we want to talk about the vandalization of the Negro League Museum?
Oh, yes. That's, we have tipping our cap and pouring one out. We don't really have a thing for, like, losing our minds about racialized vandalism.
Pulling a Pinella?
Well, Pinella has a history of, racism and
okay, no, that's
stuff.
Fair.
So I wouldn't necessarily, because he's a big Tea Party supporter. So I wouldn't.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So we gotta find who else gets really upset and gets tossed a lot. He does, but for stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Best leaner in baseball, though. It was great. yeah. So, I don't know, something.
Yeah. So it was reported that there's been a kind of weird spate of vandalism centered around Negro League players and the Negro League Museum. Someone cut the water lines on the second floor of the Buck O'Neill Research and Education Center, which is kind of next door to the Negro League Museum proper. The project was in the process of being ready to open, but that has been delayed till next year because millions of dollars worth of damage when someone cut the water lines on the second floor and then flooded the two floors below it earlier this week in Kansas City. And then prior to that, someone had set fire to Satchel Paige's
home,
which is also a historical preservation site.
Right.
I don't know what is going on, but I feel like you said, this is tied to the current climate in the United States and people feeling emboldened. I mean, what we saw in Baltimore yesterday.
Yep.
I think is part and parcel of this, like, message that hate's okay.
And it's not. It really isn't. It's, you got to be cool to other people and let them be them. And no matter what the other person identifies as or is, skin color wise, religion wise, gender wise, sexuality wise, it we're all pink on the inside. So like, stop.
Yeah,
it's just unacceptable.
it very much is unacceptable. It's ridiculous. The one I will say, Negro League Baseball Museum President Bob Kendrick said he is taking a page from the spirit of Buck O'Neill, whom the site is named after. Buck, who, if you listen to this show's intro carefully, he's the one singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in our intro theme. There's a statue of him basically right at the entrance to Cooperstown immediately after you buy your ticket to go into Cooperstown. And there's a great book Joe Posnanski wrote about, driving around with O'Neill in his later years that he calls the soul of baseball, and who a person who, despite going through like horrible circumstances in pre-integrated baseball, remained a source of positivity and just a beacon of hope.
Yeah.
And so Kendrick saying that, despite this setback, there's like a $100,000 parquet floor in the ballroom will have to be replaced and
oh,
so much
goodness.
More damage. And then just, he said, the emotional ramifications of the mean-spirited act, but that in Buck O'Neill fashion, he is going to cope with hope. I think that's the thing we should close on. Enjoy your weekend. It's a nice long weekend. It's supposed to be up and down in terms of weather, but hopefully you get outside, enjoy some baseball, whether it's playing some, watching some, and we'll be back next week. We appreciate you listening.
Thanks.